I'm an Alex Podcast, just a man doing the best he can with what he got. And today I have a special guest, my homie, my brother, part of the greatest chapter of the greatest fraternity ever, Phi Beta Sigma Fraternity Incorporated, Blue Phi.
You know.
My homie from the Big Talk Sports Entertainment, Big Chris, aka Big. How you doing, brother, man?
Bro, I'm blessed and I'm highly favored today.
Tell you something, man. I'm glad to have you on the podcast because I'm a big fan. I listen to your podcast all the damn time. The reason why I had you on and I called you like last minute is because Vince McMahon is retiring from wrestling. Not wrestling, the Olympic sport. Wrestling.
Man, first of all, I'm glad this was spur of the moment because for the listeners that don't know, this is my frat brother. He's one of the ones who saw me at college like my freshman year. And was just cool from the jump. We've been trying to get this thing to work. But he in Japan, and I'm in Tennessee. And so every time I'd be like, yeah, we can do it, I'd be forgetting the times and how they work. And so when you, like for me, especially for somebody, when you just catch me and be like, hey, what you doing? And I'd be like, I ain't doing nothing. And you say, come on. Let's do it. I ain't doing shit. Come on, let's do it.
Oh, you about to get a bunch more of them calls then.
Yeah. And that's cool too. You see me active, let's go.
For those of y'all don't know, the face of the WWE, Vince McMahon, is retiring at the tender age of 77 amidst sexual allegations from his past that he paid off multiple women and he's being muscled out. And I heard your podcast, so what's your thoughts on it first, man?
My thought was, we're about 20 years... What's this, 2022? Mm-hmm. About 20 years too late on this. If you want to be mad at Vince McMahon for paying off his former employees or whatever for if they had a sexual relation, if it was sexual harassment, I don't know. Some of it sounded like it was consensual, and he just did it because just in case, like you say, the hush money, like, hey, don't go write a memoir about this. Here go $1 million. You know, let me give you $100,000 salary when everybody else making 40. I mean, if you ever watched WWF E in the late 90s, early 2000s, you kind of should have known that this would have happened eventually. Like, it's not a surprise. I didn't say this in my podcast, but I'll say it now. I liken it to the rapper Lil Boosie, or Boosie Badass, not Lil Boosie no more, but Boosie Badass, right? I'm going to take him somewhere. He has like a cult-like following. Boosie can pretty much do a show anywhere below the Mason-Dixon.
He the Tupac of the South.
Right, and so he, you know what I'm saying? And he gonna always tell us, so anytime somebody hear him talking about gay folks, transgenders, all that, and people be like, oh, they gonna cancel. You can't cancel Boosie because his fans don't care about what you talking about. So
cancel culture ain't real anyway, but I digress.
Right. It's not. that's a whole nother story, but you're right, it's not. And so when Vince stepped aside, he came out on SmackDown. People cheered him. When he retired, definitely did like this whole thing for him on SmackDown. People cheering, thank you. Like, because it's his own entity. Like, nobody really cares because the fans know what's been up with Vince.
Why do you think this matters now? Because I'm along the same lines as you. This is why I think this story matters now. I truly believe that Disney or Fox or NBC is going to try to buy WWE. And the only reason why they're pushing out Vince McMahon right now is because, look, man, when you got a $1 billion company that grossed $1 billion for the first time this year, you're going to look for discounts in any other ways. Mm-hmm. The stock market is so speculative. An earnings report or bad news will manipulate a stock price. That's why people's getting mad at Elon Musk for saying, oh, Dogecoin is blowing up because he's manipulating stock prices because his influence made other people buy that.
Right.
When you got a $1 billion corporation and you got a CEO who's written in scandal, that's going to drop down TV prices and stock prices. And I think they didn't need that when you're going to sell the company. So look, make a clean slate. Make it clean for everybody. And I ain't gonna lie. Also, the tender age of 77, your next accomplishment should be retirement. So, look, I ain't mad at that either.
Right.
What do you think?
I agree. You know, you always got to follow the money in these situations. I heard him on the Pat McAfee show. He had an interview. It was right before WrestleMania. And at the time, he wasn't even thinking about retirement. Mm. You know, like, if my memory serves me correct, retirement came up, but he wasn't like thinking about it. Like, it wasn't something he was thinking about. And I just want to know, because I didn't look into this at all. I haven't. I just want to know who blew the whistle. Like, where did this report with the New York Times, like, how did it even, how do you even discover this? Because it's not like the money was just paid this year. You know, how does this even come out?
The Wall Street Journal broke the story, right? And
yes.
Say what you want. The Wall Street Journal is a super conservative newspaper. Like, super. That's not liberal media, guys. Right? So
right.
When something happens in the Wall Street Journal, and I liken this back to when John Gruden got caught up with those emails, I was like, why did those stories come out in the Wall Street Journal? And that's because it was something fiscal. It has to go back to the money. Like, that whole thing with John Gruden, like, wait, y'all making John Gruden the fall guy? Vince McMahon is the fall guy because somebody is trying to buy that company and they're trying to muddy up. In my personal opinion, this is speculation now, but I feel like they're trying to muddy up the waters so they can get that company at a discount rate. That's what I'm thinking. That's the only way. Because, look, man, history don't prove we don't care about women. Like, we don't.
You won't get an argument from me on there either, because that's the truth. But motherfuckers don't be caring about women like that. Let's say the world.
We don't. It's a general. We don't. We don't care, dude. So, like, when that came up, we're hitting them on sexual scandals. And like you said on your podcast, we knew that, dog. Like, why don't you do it 10 years? Now, you could say the climate now is that or such we can hold him accountable. Cool. Maybe. Right? But
right.
I'm looking at this like, yeah, there's some shenanigans in the background with money, and somebody's trying to, like, muscle this for a better price.
Always.
Notice what Vince did. Vince gave up CEO shit, but you know what he didn't do? He kept the majority shares in the stock.
Really?
Yep, yep. So that tells you one thing. He's like, oh, dude, when this money comes down and they got to buy it, if you pay me. Because I think this is a mind trick from Vince. I think Vince was like, you know what? All right, yeah, you're right. I'm a bad CEO and I will drive the price of this company down. Bet. I'm not the CEO anymore. I'm not the face anymore. I'm gone. But you're still going to have to pay me?
Yeah, it's all in technicality.
Yeah.
It's all, yeah, you're not going to. Like, he ain't gonna lose no money.
Nope.
But like you say, at 77, it was and you know what? To even just go a step further, it may have been his shareholders coming to him like, hey, look, you know we trying to sell the company. You know we, because it was rumblings last year. Like, you know we trying to sell the company. They fired all these people, Bray Wyatt and all the other talent they've been firing. So it's like they trying to trim the fat. And then if I'm not mistaken again, if memory serves me correct, sometime last year, the company, like you said, they grossed $1 billion last year. And then the company was valued at like $2 to $3 billion. Mm-hmm. And then they sold the network, the WWE network, to Peacock for, I think, $1 billion or something like a stupid rate. So he ain't never been a dumb businessman. So somebody, if not himself, came up with the idea like, hey, these people done put it out here that you did this. Vince McMahon, we know your reputation. You've been sued for steroid use. No, you've been a womanizer on TV. We all get it. You ain't got to go out here and lie. Like, if you did it, you did it. But you might want to step away. And that's cool. I'm not going to lose no money, but I'll lose my title. I'm 77 years old. Fuck it. You know what I'm saying?
Well, I got the fruit. And I did it all. Literally, it all.
My daughter can run this. Until they sell it or however they want to do it, but I'm going to get my money.
You know, here's the thing, right? And this is why I want to talk about this, because Vince McMahon is a uniquely American success story, and you can spin it multiple ways, right? This is a man who bought the company in 1982 from his father, and through hard work and diligence, he is the epitome of hustle culture in America. Like, he took that company from nothing. He was the announcer. I think you said this on your podcast. He was the announcer. Yep. He was the promo man. He was the CEO. He was the talent at point out there actually wrestling. He took this company from a back basement organization to the worldwide conglomerate it is. It said that he was supposed to stay on as the creative director of WWE. And to me, that's the darkest side of this damn story, because wrestling is based off racism, dog. It's like some of the most racist, incendiary shit in the world. But the thing is, wrestling is a damn good barometer of how we feel in America. You remember when he had the Mexicos out there riding on the lawnmowers? pretending like they was lazy Mexicans. Oh, the most racist dude, Papa Shango.
Oh, man.
They had dude out there on the Wish Doctor kick. The African Dream, Akeem.
He said, my nigga. He said, what's up, my nigga, to John Cena. Like, Bro, he had a do-rag on one
time. Yes, he had a do-rag on. Like, yo, this is what the company was built on, dude. So when I look at that, I see a mixed legacy. But here's the thing. That only could fly because America wanted to see that. And that was like the beauty of Vince McMahon. He leaned to all the racist, stereotypical tropes. Shit that would not fly today. Man, look, you remember the Iron Sheik? He had the Iron Sheik out there. Now, like, bro, most of these characters were Vince McMahon's brainchild. Like, he's the one that took that. Like, even the white characters were, like, stereotypically racist. Like, the big boss man, the Cobb County police officer who had a nightstick beating up people. Like, that was a stereotype. A nightstick. They had one scene where he almost put the nightstick on somebody's butt. Like, literally had that scene on there. The promoter slick.
I love this conversation. I just want to say that first of all, because me and you have never talked about wrestling before. And just to hear somebody who understands all of the BS, but it was fun. Like, bro, I don't care what nobody says. It was racist, but even as black men, when you watch it, you understand who that character is and what they like to see the Nation of Domination, like, and some of the stuff they would do, and then DX and the stuff they was doing as far as like skits with them, and like you talk about the Iron Sheik, right? So you got the Iron Sheik and Sergeant Slaughter beefing during the Kuwait War. You know what I'm saying? Like, this is 91, 92. And he does it all the time. He had a Punjabi prison match.
Yep.
You got Jinder Mahal, like some of these. And then let's not get started on Yokozuna being Hawaiian or whatever, playing somebody from Japan. Like, that's just a whole nother thing.
If I got to give the number one top racist character in WWE, the homie Virgil. Like, yo, they had dude.
Virgil, bro.
They had dude out there on that fashion step. Like, literally. For those of y'all don't know who young, there was this one character, which I ain't gonna lie, I used to love this guy in the 80s. He was called the Million Dollar Man. And Ted DiBiase. And he had what was called the Million Dollar Belt. And he was a millionaire, right? Mm-hmm. That's back when a million meant something, right, in the 80s. So, dude would flash money. Every time he beat somebody in the ring, he would stick some money in their mouth because dude's about that money.
So disrespectful.
Man, so disrespectful. You like sticking money in people's mouth, dirty money in their mouth. But he had a black help servant called Virgil who would literally like just be the man's waiter and butler.
God.
That was it. That was his get down now. And that was Vince McMahon's brainchild. And that's how he honestly blew up the WWE to the point it is now, man, by leaning into racial tropes. Now, here's the thing, right? Whether we think it's good or not, that just is what it is, man. Like, dude did that, and I think it says more about us as a society than we were just watching that. I started watching wrestling from, like, maybe 7 to, I want to say 12, but at around 11, there's a line of demarcation where you start to realize, okay, this is scripted. As a kid processing that at age 5 and 7, this is real to you. Those storylines are real. And I think the most damaging part of that, it did form a lot of my thoughts about foreign people. And it did like perpetuate stereotypes of different Americans I had because of wrestling. Because I didn't know those storylines were fake until I got like around 11. Like, oh, wait, this ain't real.
Same here.
Was it a good or bad thing, man?
Oh, man, it was great. Great, bro. Listen, because I'm a historian of this stuff. Like, I really like examine it now, especially as an adult, like from just the business side. Because like you say, when he bought the company, it was still a territory, but he caught it in that sweet spot when cable television was coming around, so he was able to maneuver. And he was in the Northeast. All these other places was down in the South. You know, Southeast, Southwest, you know, in Texas, and then Georgia, Tennessee, Kentucky, Florida, stuff like that, the Carolinas, Jim Crockett promotion, you know what I'm saying? So it was like, what are you going to do that's going to be different than everybody else? Because everybody got wrestling. Everybody got wrestling, you know what I'm saying? Everybody doing that everywhere. But when you throw that entertainment on there, what kind of entertainment? And you go into this racial stuff, and like you said, you got Slick, and you got Virgil, and then you got the Million Dollar Man with Virgil, and then you got Yokozuna's in the 90s, and you dealing with an aspect of America that at that time in the mid-80s, late 80s, they were 20 years removed almost from the Civil Rights Act.
Mm-hmm.
But you got a diverse crowd. So you're going to have white folks in the crowd who laughing at it or who love it. You have black folks in the crowd who probably don't like it or they just don't care. Then you put Dusty Rhodes with Sapphire.
That did happen, did it?
So it's like this was an equal opportunist when it come to using race and stuff like that because it all made dollars and cents. It all made, you want to see the big boss man get beat up if you black. You want to see, if you're an American and just love America, you know, you want to see Sergeant Slaughter beat up the Iron Sheik.
I think this is the undersold part of WWE. It's not really the wrestling, like you said. It's the storylines that made it compelling. It was the dramatic storylines. Once again, as a young kid, I thought those storylines were real. Call me an idiot.
I won't call you an idiot. Yeah. I won't call you an idiot. I won't. You want to know why?
Why is that?
Because I'm watching something now on YouTube. It's like the 80s. It's a documentary about wrestling in the 80s and stuff. And you're not an idiot because you were 11 when you found out. Think about being a wrestler in the 70s, in the 60s, in the early 80s. It was grown men wanting to kill some of these wrestlers after a match, like, because they believed it so much. You know what I'm saying? They thought it was... Roddy Piper talks about almost getting stabbed after a match in, I want to say, in Memphis. You know what I'm saying? Like, and just to piggyback off the storyline thing, there's just a fun fact, because I know you'll enjoy this. They picked up storylines and how to develop them because of Memphis wrestling.
Oh, I was going to pivot to that because people don't know we're from the Mid-South area, right? And that was the wrestling mecca. Like, before Vince took over, that was the hot spot. Like, if you wanted to be anything, you went to Memphis to wrestle. And let me tell you something. There's only two kings I respect. Elvis Presley and Jerry Lawler. Them the only two kings I respect. Like, people talking about, I'm the king of Memphis. If you ain't Jerry Lawler or Elvis Presley, nah, bro, you ain't the king to me.
I'm trying to tell you, my next door neighbor, when I was a kid, she used to go down there. And my grandmama, before I was born, they told me she used to go down to Memphis. I forgot what night it was. I think it was either Sunday night or Monday. It was Sunday nights, I think. Friday, Saturday, or Sunday, down at the Coliseum. In the pyramid, like, Memphis wrestling was just, it was the ish, for lack of a better term, it was the ish.
It was ish. It was also the, like, the startup, if you wanted to get to WWE, like, that was the recruiting ground. Like, most of your famous WWE stars came from Memphis. Like, the homie Stone Cold Steve Austin was stunning Steve Austin in Memphis.
Mm-hmm. The Rock had a stint down there.
Yep.
He was, what was his name, Flex Kamana.
Yeah.
The Undertaker had a stint down there. Ric Flair came through at one point. A lot.
Bushwhackers?
The Bushwhackers. Like, anybody you can name that was wrestling on TV in the late 80s, early 90s, they came through there. Kurt Hennig had a stint down there, I want to say. He beat Jerry Lawler back in, like, 87 or 88 for the USWA title. Rick Rude came through. Macho Man came through in the 70s. Like, it was a lot, like, the who's who.
Yo, if you like the Common Knowledge Podcast, check out the Random Show, hosted with me and the homie, Alex Lex Caliber Hunter. On the Random Show, we talk about random shit. Follow us on Instagram, at random, that's RANDUMB, random. Favorite wrestler?
Ooh, that's tough. I'm gonna just tell you why, because I'm a WCW guy.
Oh, really? You that guy?
But the thing is, though, I grew up watching the WWF more than WCW because I used to get these old tapes and Memphis. Like, it's a lot. This that could be another 20 minutes, but just to make it simple, and WWF is Shawn Michaels.
That's a good pick.
In WCW, my guy was always Sting.
I knew you were going to say Sting. I knew it.
But, as a caveat, Sting was a better entertainer. He was a better character. But if we just going to talk, Chris, if you had to pick a wrestler that would be the guy, it's Ric Flair.
Wrestling falls under, like, different categories, right? You have your ring athleticism and your presence in the ring and how you can act and sell a punch, right? Then outside of that, you have the promo. You know, how you promote yourself. Also, how you interact with the crowd. Your presence. Some wrestlers do better on the athletic side. Like, I would say Rey Mysterio was very good in the athletic side. Like, he would give you some high flying and death-defying stunts, right? But not so good in the promo, which I love Rey Mysterio. He's in my top five, right? But only one guy, I think, fully encompasses all of that. And it ain't Hulk Hogan. It's the Macho Man, Randy Savage. What's not to love about dude? First, Macho is in the name. Actually brought his wife on board to get a check at the early years. And he fucks with the hood. Was a rapper for a long time.
The first
actual wrestler to break into acting, right? Had a illustrious acting career. And if I'm not mistaken, did voice acting for cartoons. Man, the Macho Man Randy Savage. The truth. The truth, man. Love that guy.
No. This is what I'll say to that, because I won't be the person that argues against that, because he's in my top five for sure. Like,
gotta be.
He like number three or four on my list. So Macho Man, he started wrestling in like the 70s. And so by the time 92 rolls around, he been in the game almost 20 years, about 17. You know, and Ric Flair had too. See, those are guys that started in like the mid-70s. Ric Flair in the ring, though, I think for me is like the endurance. Like the Macho Man could have a great match, but how many great matches could he have consistently? He was stuck in a certain spot, in a certain space where his talent couldn't be fully, not even his talent, like his stature, his aura couldn't really be fully recognized because he was playing stick and fiddle to Hulk Hogan for so many years. The Macho Man, for me, his story is sad because he was a better in-ring talent. His character was just as over as his Hulkamania. All of that. You know what I'm saying? All of that. All of that. It's just he played his character wasn't kid-friendly all the way, but the kids loved his hats and his glasses and all that stuff.
Slim Jims, baby. Snapping to a Slim Jim.
He was a heel in a world in WWE where heels weren't liked yet.
Oh, true.
You know what I'm saying?
True.
Like, but for Ric Flair in the NWA, Jim Crockett days, and you know, he had a cool four horseman. Like, his gimmick was cool, but when he got in the ring, he could sell. His storytelling was just it's second to none. Like the rivalry with Dusty Rhodes, bruh. Like
classic.
Like, bruh, they made so much money. You'd pay money to see him lose, but he'd come out on top. And even when he lost, you was like, dang, like what a match. You know what I'm saying? Like, he flipping over the turnbuckle, he begging in the ring, he bleeding, he bloodied up with his blonde hair. And you just want to see him get beat up, and he get beat up, and it look good when he get beat up. And then he win.
That's true. Ric Flair did beg a lot in the ring, now that I think about it.
The king of begging and being bloodied, and then he'll poke you in the eye. You know what I'm saying? Then his robe game was on point.
Oh, man, definitely had all the five robes.
The robe game were on point, you know. He had several rivalries he was able to work with. Like Dusty Rhodes, 300-pound plumber man, supposedly. Then you got, what's my guy name? Ricky Steamboat. Then you got the Terry Funks. And then he had a rivalry with Sting and, you know, Hogan in the mid-90s in WWF. And then he came to WWF and they gave him the belt. And he took the WCW belt to WWF and had it on TV and said he was the real world champion. That was some gangster shit.
It was.
Gangster shit. I'm like, bruh, how you get away with doing that?
Yeah, during the time they was on Rival, they had a blood feud against the two networks.
Yes. And the nigga came on TV and said, I'm the real world heavyweight champion. I'm sorry, but anybody in 1992 that can go from being NWA, WCW, and you come over into Hulk Hogan territory, where fans already know you, but the world, international TV fans don't know you, and you get over like you get over in just a year, Hey, that's special. That's special. But he was a racist too. Yeah, now.
Oh, of course he was.
You know, that's, I don't want to leave that unsaid, right? I don't want nobody to listen to this and be like, oh, Big just loved Ric Flair and he was a racist. I've seen a lot of videos about a lot of the stuff he said, and he's probably one of the ones, like you say, black people love him, but guess what? He used black swag and he uses black culture, you know, talking all this shit he was talking in the 80s, wearing jewelry and all that. Rappers was doing that already. You know, he was just doing it with a suit on and blonde hair.
See, that was the unrealistic standard that black people have, though, in America. We have to assimilate. And if we removed ourselves from everything that was racist or somebody who's potentially racist, then we just got to leave America.
Right.
And that's an unrealistic standard for us. So when you tell me somebody who grew up in the 50s and 60s is possibly is a racist, that's baked in the cake to me. Like, yes, I'm not condoning it. I'm not with it. But realistically, I know what it is. Like, while I'm trying to change the world, I'm living in the world, the real world. So, yes. Man. But black folks had to gravitate towards somebody because we didn't have representation on TV. So that's like one of the flaws that we're trying to fix now. I actually talked to a lot of older white people about this, like in entertainment. And this kind of goes back to the WWE thing. Because there was lack of representation of black people in TV in general, we had to gravitate towards somebody. And your picks are not going to be perfect. They're going to be imperfect people. But you see a lot of white folks now railing against the fact that, oh my God, how dare this show, Stranger Things, set in the 80s, have so many black characters in there? And my whole like pushback to that is, look, when you look at shows in the 80s, where were the black people? Like, Mayberry.
Hold on. I'm sorry. People were mad that the show Stranger Things had black people?
Yes, it's a lot of people. Okay, so you have a lot of purists now who are saying,
there's only two black people in it.
Okay, so it's actually more than that because, you know, the parents... There you go. Police officer. Yeah, one black family, right? But then you got the police officer and multiple people in the background as extras. But you have a lot of TV purists who are actually, I ain't gonna say racist, but I think they're not recognizing the privilege that white folks have had to be in TV and be prominent in TV for so long. They don't really get that. It goes back to what I said in a previous podcast. It's the BET argument, right? So BET was spawned because there was a lack of black representation on TV.
Right.
And there was no black people. And black people tried to get on TV, but we only got portrayed as the help or somebody stupid or the fetching step, right?
Mm-hmm.
So then when we said, you know what? Fuck it. We're going to make our own. The same people that kept black folks out was like, okay, why y'all got a BET? Now we need a WET. When that was just TV. And that's the same thing.
Right. Now, like, you already got that.
Yeah, it's called TV, bro. Like, that's your WET. So I think
pick a channel.
And that was the thing with Stranger Things and the WWE and Ric Flair, right? Like, for black people, we have to pick somebody until we have more representation. Until you have the Rocks. Because, like, a lot of people rock with Kamala because he was, like, the only black representation. But look at the role model you got. Like, yo, Kamala's my guy?
And then he was Kamala. Like, they didn't even give him no belt or nothing.
Nothing.
You got the junkyard dog.
Junkyard dog. Coco Beware?
A leash on his neck. Shout out to Coco Beware. He's from Union City, Tennessee.
Man, I love Coco Beware, by the way. Classic.
But all these sucking and jiving. And hell, if we just gonna really talk about it, they didn't even let The Rock be black when his daddy name was Rocket Johnson.
Man.
Like, what kind of Samoan you know with the last name Johnson? You know, like, he's a Samoan. We're going to talk about his granddaddy. We're going to talk about all his cousins. But we ain't going to talk about the fact that the main daddy's name is Rocky Johnson. His last name is Johnson. I don't know nobody from Hawaii with the name Johnson.
I do this thing in Japan, right, when I teach kids. I do this cultural thing. I put up pictures of people because it's always this notion of blackness. Or a preconceived notion of blackness, this form through stereotypes. And that's why, like, the WWE and entertainment is so damn dangerous, the flip side of it.
Mm-hmm.
Because those stereotypes get perpetuated, and that's the only thing they know about black people. So I do this game, I call it, where are they from? Are they black? And one of the people I put up there is The Rock. I'm like, is he black? Is he white? What is he? My students always be like, well, is he Hispanic? Nope, black. Because, like, people don't know that the image of blackness is so damn amorphous. It's used to fit, like, different things. Like, when they had him in the Nation of Domination, they kind of leaned into his blackness a little bit. But then, you see, when he got into the movies, they pulled back from the blackness. Like, no, he's Samoan.
He ain't black no more.
Samoan.
He like white women and he's Samoan.
Yeah.
I mean, in real life, he do like white women. So, you know.
Man, shout out to like a white woman. I don't see nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, I get it. I mean, I ain't sure. I'm just saying, it's like, how can I put this? You have Booker T, right? Shout out to them for allowing him and his wife to do their thing and letting them put Charmel in the Hall of Fame. I loved that. But then you got this other black dude who is the star. Like, Booker T was a star, but The Rock is The Rock. True story. You know what I'm saying? Like, he's The Rock. But you won't allow The Rock, the biggest superstar of your company, to be recognized and pushed out as a black man. That's the problem.
Yeah, I don't think you could have did it. They couldn't did it for The Rock, man. Because at that time, do you think America was ready to have a black face? Like, how long was it? Because technically, The Rock was the first black champion in WWE. But you see, the first black champion is Kofi Kingston because he's that black.
Yeah, he dog enough for
him. Mm-hmm.
He dog enough. Like, that's the problem, bro. It's like, when you ask the question, would they have been ready? Motherfucker ain't never ready.
True story.
They ain't never ready. If we as people have to, or if they have to be ready, like, hey, are you ready to do this? Are you ready to allow somebody to get some of your pie when you know they love that pumpkin pie or they love that apple pie? Like, no, I don't want them to get none of this pie. You seen the movie Life. No, I don't want them to get none of this pie. Hell no, I'm not ready. But you ready. You got to look at him. He's selling out shows and people love him. Man, call that nigga Samoan. Call that nigga Samoan. I can't take another black man, man. Oh, I can't take it. No, he's Samoan. And that's okay.
Like, wrestling will show you exactly what America feels and how it is. Like, if you want to know what America is, the temperature, the racial temperature of America, watch wrestling. It'll tell you.
Turn it on Monday Night Raw. You will see.
Have you ever listened to the Common Knowledge Podcast and be like, damn, DJ L. Spade, I wish you would talk more about music? But yo, I got you covered. Check out the Secret House Against the World podcast on YouTube, hosted by the homie Robinson Mega, or Mega Robinson, if you please. Co-hosted with me and the homie Jed Axel, we talk about new releases in the hip-hop sphere. Basically underground, because that's their taste preference. But yo, if you want to know what I think about music, check out Secret House Against the World on YouTube. That's Secret House Against the World. Got to get your take on some sports, though. Like,
talk to me.
Teams you got coming up. What was your thoughts on the finals and the NBA and the Golden State during the playoffs?
Ooh.
Any picks you got coming up for the NFL?
Oh, man. So, I'm going to start with the NFL. I'm a huge 49ers fan. I saw what we did with a quarterback that's okay. And I got faith in the, you know me, man. I got faith in the young brother, Trey Lance. This dude, he gonna be a stud. That's all I've been asking for since Colin Kaepernick got hurt and couldn't play no more. I've been needing that. Like, I see, you see, just like wrestling, right? In professional sports, especially the NFL, it's the you know, the old boys club. Like,
mm-hmm.
Black quarterbacks can't be smart enough to do stuff, but they can play receiver or corner or whatever. They not smart. Nah, F all that. We got plenty of black smart quarterbacks throughout the years. You just got to give them a chance. You know, you sprinkle in a Dante Culpepper and a Michael Vick here and there and all that. But I'm saying today's quarterback, when you look around the league, even though they try to push this Justin Herbert kid from the Chargers on us, he all right. He's straight, but I didn't see him play in the playoffs last year. I ain't seen him win an MVP or Rookie of the Year or nothing. Lamar Jackson, they do my boy so dirty.
They do him so bad.
They do my boy so dirty. It's so disrespectful how they do him. He stay out of trouble. He come to work. He do his business. He was hurt last year, so yeah, they didn't make the playoffs. But
they almost did because of him. Like, he was the reason why they almost made it. He had nothing but scrubs.
I'm hearing, you know, old play. Oh, don't nobody want to come play for him. I ain't going to say that. I just think Baltimore cheap, and they don't know how to go get a real talented player at a skill position. Mm-hmm. Like, that's just my personal opinion. I hadn't seen him do it before him or with him. So I'm not going to blame it on Lamar Jackson. But the 49ers, man, we owned the Rams up until that last possession in the NFC Championship game. We're going to come back healthier. I think we're going to the Super Bowl with Trey Lance. That's just me. I mean, hey, we was in the Super Bowl a couple years ago. We was one drive away from being there again with Jimmy Garoppolo. I'm sorry. James Richard Garoppolo. I can't call him Jimmy G.
He was so garbage. So
I got to call him by his government name. He played like an OVC quarterback. Shout out to the OVC, but still. I do. Now, a sleeper team for me in the NFL this year is going to be the Saints. I'm sorry. I said the Saints. I'm sorry. Jameis Winston, I like him, but it's not the Saints. It's the Colts. Matt Ryan.
Sounds better.
So, yeah, I know. I'm sorry. I don't know how I got the Saints and the Colts mixed up. Two different areas, two different conferences. But the Colts, man, they got Matt Ryan. He ain't the best, but he damn sure better than Carson Wentz. They got a solid defense, great running back. If Matt Ryan can stay healthy, the Titans not going to win the AFC South. So that's me. That's just my take. I heard the sigh. Talk to me.
All right, man. So for those of y'all don't know, we're both from the great state of Tennessee. And a lot of folks in Tennessee are not Titans fans.
Nope. They came too late.
Yeah, it's four basic teams that people in Tennessee rock with. And that's San Francisco 49ers, Dallas Cowboys, the Steelers, and as a wild card, just maybe as a wild card, I would say maybe the Washington team because they had Doug Williams and the black quarterback, right?
Yeah.
So, like...
Or the Colts because of Peyton Manning.
Oh, yes, because of Peyton Manning from Tennessee. But it's a struggle for me, man, being a Tennessee Titans fan because I was an Oilers fan because of Warren Moon.
Warren Moon,
who the NFL, you were talking about black quarterbacks, it really hit hard on me because Warren Moon was the guy who had to go to the CFL.
It's crazy, man.
And play there 5 years. And then, because he was supposed to get drafted in the NFL. And what happened was, like you said, they tried to make him a receiver. And Warren Moon was like, nah, dude, I'm a quarterback. I'm not going to be a receiver for you. So he went to the CFL, broke all the records up there. And then all the records still got him. And people's like, oh, the NFL, we made a terrible mistake. We need to get this guy. So
right, now we need him.
Tennessee, the Houston Oilers at the time, got Warren Moon. And that was my first time seeing a black quarterback on the field. And people try to reduce him to saying he was just a running athletic quarterback. When you look at it, man, Warren Moon had an arm, but that was the first time I gravitated towards the NFL, NFL team. Because before then, I wasn't even interested in football, but representation matters. When I saw Warren Moon, I'm like, I'm in. That's my guy.
That man was throwing that pill. He wasn't even a runner. He couldn't even run.
But people try to reduce him and say, oh, the only thing he did is have athleticism. No, dude had a rocket. And that was later in his year after he did 5 years in the CFL. So y'all kind of killed his development. You want to be honest?
Warren Moon played till he was damn near 40.
40.
A little bit over 40, I think. And he was slanging that thing in Minnesota. He was slanging that thing in Seattle. He was slanging that thing in Houston. Pause.
Right. Which, that's the reason why I'm a Tennessee Titans fan, because I was an Oilers fan. When the chain, for those of y'all don't know, the team left Houston and went to Tennessee. And that's why I am a Tennessee Titans fan, because that's the Houston Oilers. And now I almost jumped off of them. And I always tell this story. I jumped off him almost because they traded Warren Moon to let Cody Carson.
See, that's how I know you're a fan, because I don't even know who that is.
Dude, so, all right, just all right, bruh. It still hurts today to think about it, right? So, Houston Oilers doing great. Warren Moon slinging that thing, man. Houston Oilers was notoriously cheap, so they didn't have nobody. Warren Moon had scrubs, but they drafted a quarterback called Cody Carson. I want to say he was out of Utah. Dude was booty, butt cheeks, garbage. But they kept on calling for him, much like with Cam Newton, right? They kept on calling for the white backup quarterback to the point they traded Warren Moon to put Cody Carson in. And surprise, surprise, what happened when they put him in, he was booty, butt cheeks, garbage. And it ended up like taking the team back 5 years.
Yep.
And this was Warren Moon went to Minnesota and started slinging that thing up there. Pause. He still has some stuff left in the pipe.
Yeah, man, the black QB, bro. And the crazy thing about it, and I know you asked me about, you know, the NBA, and I'm gonna get to that real quick, but we here. Like, I don't understand how a Bill Polian can get on TV, well, actually, I do understand, and say the things that he says about Lamar Jackson. Like, when I heard him say all this stuff about Lamar Jackson, I knew then it was time for him to get off TV. Yeah, I know what people want to say and want to think. It was time. It was just time. It was time, bro. Like, you have never... I'm a Miami Hurricanes college football fan. Lamar Jackson from Florida. He's from Broward County. I hated that we didn't have, like, the first time when I relaunched my podcast, this is how much I love this guy as a player. My partner said, bro, you heard of Lamar Jackson? I was like, nah, this was probably week 3 of the college football season that year. It's 2016. I said, bro, you got to check him out. I watched one game and I said, oh, he going to win the Heisman. And I have never seen anybody run like he ran and was able to throw like he threw under control. Like, it was mind-blowing how he was breaking folks and all that. But I digress. But a Lamar Jackson, a Patrick Mahomes, a Russell Wilson, Trey Lance coming up. Watch what I tell you. This dude, this kid, it's going to be nice. Jalen Hurts.
Yep. This is the year of the black quarterback, Dak Prescott.
Like, a lot of these guys, man, they're good. Like, they're not elite. You know, Russell Wilson is elite. Like, I think they're going to win the AFC West. Surprise, surprise. Like, I think the Broncos are going to win the AFC West. I don't know. This is going to sound funny. Patrick Mahomes just got married. He got a baby on the way, I think.
It matters.
That matters a lot. I don't know if he can bounce back from that AFC championship game. I don't know if he was. I don't know what was going on in the game. I thought he was point shaving, honestly.
Do you really?
Yeah, hell yeah. Something was up. And if he wasn't point shaving, then that means he really just was out there on some bullshit. Like, he needed to have an excuse for that game.
I think the excuse was, man, it was on his ass. Like, dude didn't have an offensive line. Yes, they were. Like, dude, the pressure that was on that guy, like, from the jump, man, he didn't have no left tackle. Like, they was on his ass. And he was still making miraculous throws, but I think that's to his genius. Because the pressure he had on his ass was kind of indicative of why you need an offensive line.
I like to rewatch games. I might rewatch it because I felt like he was just holding the ball to him. Like, sometimes it looked like he was just running around in the backfield and then, okay, now I'm going to try to throw it. Mm. Or now I'm going to try to get out of there. Like, it's something just, the second half, something seemed off. Now, I don't know if he was hurt. I don't know if he was point shaving.
You know, everybody hurt in the NFL, though.
Right. AFC championship game. There's something going on.
Who's not hurt? Know?
So that was just strange for me. The Warriors. I mean, you know, we all know that injuries are part of it every year when it comes to the playoffs. It's the NBA finals or the NBA playoffs. I call it the war of attrition because you got to go 7-game series. Who's going to be healthy? Who's going to show up every game? The Grizzlies had a great season. Jordan Poole was on some slick stuff. Ja Morant, he twisted his knee. I'm sorry. I don't know how they don't call that a flagrant foul. Go back and call that a flagrant foul or whatever. When he pushed him in the back and then he pulled his knee with the other hand.
You think that was intentional?
Yes.
Okay, so yeah. I do too. I don't see how people say it's not. Because I looked at the tape four times. I'm like, dude, that was a get back move.
Like, that's not a basketball play. Like, I know a lot of athletes. I know a lot of basketball players. You do too. Mm-hmm. You can play some basketball in your life. That is not a bad. I can see if he was like just reaching for the ball, and like when he reached, his right hand just happened to get his knee. But when you look at it multiple times, he took his left hand, he pushed him with, he put force on his back, and then he grabbed his knee and he pulled it in the other direction. How is that not dirty? But I digress. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's just dirty to me. Like, I'm watching it. I'm like, this is clearly a dirty play. Like, nobody's going to go back because you know, they can go back and give them a tech or give them a flagrant or whatever after watching it. Like, it happens all the time. So I'm just, I don't understand. Like, that's the type of stuff that make people be like, oh, they hating on Memphis. Or
they were. They I think that you didn't want State. You didn't want Memphis to be in the finals, dog. I think the ratings would have went down.
See, that's the problem. That people lose faith in professional sports. That's why I'm talking about Patrick Mahomes' point statement. That's why I'm talking about that, because it's like, it could happen. Because when you say they don't want Memphis in the finals, I'm going to say, why not? Because Ja Morant is a superstar now.
He is. Now.
Like, yeah, you got Steph Curry and you got Klay Thompson. See, it's all about storylines and all of it. That's what make wrestling, like we was talking about earlier, mm-hmm. such a good thing. A storyline. You got Klay Thompson's redemption. You got what's his name? The other light-skinned dude? Steph Curry. Steph Curry. I'm sorry. You got Steph Curry trying to get his finals MVP and get this whole I can't win without KD monkey off his back. And you got that. Then you got Boston. No, it's Boston. So whatever year it is, if Boston in the finals is good for the NBA. I mean, they won. I'm not going to sit here and boo-boo on them, but they won. They took care of business. And, I mean, they had the better team. The better team won.
Do you think that KD would be a good fit for the Grizzlies? Because there was rumblings about KD coming to the Memphis Grizzlies. Do you think they should get him?
It's funny you say that, because the rumblings, I shit you not, my best friend was talking about this before the trade request. Like, he was saying, bro, if we can get KD this summer, like, that would be... And I'm like, why would you even think? He's like, man, you know, he said he liked Ja game. I'm like, okay, cool. But to answer your question, of course he would. But it's just what you would have to give up for him to be a fit. Like, if you giving up everybody but Ja, it's going to be terrible. But if you could keep Bane, or, you know what I'm saying, maybe keep Dylan Brooks and Triple J, but you're not going to be able to keep Triple J. Like, if I'm the Nets, I need Triple J. It could work. It's just, man, look, bro, you from Memphis, man. KD's sensitive, man. KD's sensitive, man. He ain't cut out for Memphis. Like, you know he probably going to be living in Arlington or Oakland. He ain't living near the city, and he ain't going to be in the city like that. He can't be. Like, his mentality ain't for that.
I think he could do it, though.
On the basketball court, yeah. But when basketball over with, shit.
Okay, so here's the thing. I think he's can do it because he was in Oklahoma. Oklahoma ain't got nothing, right? Oklahoma's a worse spot than Memphis. You're right. Now, the Memphis mentality, he's not going to probably be built for that. However, I think he could adjust. And I agree with you. What are you going to have to give up for KD is my question. But I say you give up whatever you can, and then you pick up the pieces.
Pick up the pieces. The whole way in Brothers Reference. Yeah.
Yep. Because I really feel like if you got Ja and KD, and maybe keep Steven Adams, because you're right, you're not going to keep Jackson. You're not. He's gone. I feel like if you can keep KD, Ja Morant, Steven Adams, all right, man, let everything else work itself out. At least try. Go for it, man.
We'll figure this out.
KD wants to be coach, because the Steve Nash thing, come on, dog. That's
the problem. Steve Nash, the coach. When they hired him, I knew they wouldn't win a championship. Folks got to talking about it. I said, man, look, you got Steve Nash, and then he had Mike D'Antoni on the sideline, too. You knew they weren't going to win.
No defense.
What kind of defense, bro? No defense, no backbone. He got no spine, bro. Like, I'm sorry, Steve Nash, I just don't believe you.
Need more people.
I never believed in you, even though you got two MVPs as a player. I never believed in you as a player. I damn sure not going to believe you as a coach.
One MVP's a bogus, though.
Of course. Yeah. I mean, you know, it is what it is. That's what that's what the NBA wanted. They got a Canadian.
Yeah.
Politics.
I mean, I'm a Dallas Mavericks fan, right? I love his time at the Mavericks, but let's just be honest, dog. Like, that time he won the MVP, that wasn't
That was Shaq's MVP.
It was.
Yeah. It was Shaq's MVP. He got it. It's all good. Shaq got the ring, but he got the MVP. And so I don't know, man. I can't respect Steve Nash as a coach because
he didn't do nothing. You had other more qualified coaches that you could have picked besides Steve Nash.
Yeah, hell, not even about race. The guy that they got rid of before him.
Right.
I forgot his name. It wasn't Quinn Snyder. It was Freak. I forgot his name. Whoever he was, though. He had them in the playoffs. Like, I blame the Nets for all these troubles that they might be having. Like, I blame them. You got folks say, well,
Jack Vaughn. Jack Vaughn was who was, yeah.
Yeah, Jack Vaughn. Like, you would have got rid of those guys for James Harden, too. No, I wouldn't have, because I know better. I saw what happened with him and Chris Paul and Russell Westbrook. Why I want to add him to my locker room?
The Nets are just incompetent, man. I think that was a money grab, and I think the mentality was, look, man, we get all these stars, we roll the ball out there, it doesn't matter who the coach is. And I think we figured out that scheme does matter. What do you think about the Dallas Mavericks, man, and the homie Luka?
Hey, dude, the problem.
Man, say it again for the folks in the back.
Dude, the problem. Like, he a real deal problem.
Say it again for the folks in the back.
He a real problem, man. Like when they beat the Suns, I said, okay. I was one of those guys who, like, I like Luka, but I just wanted to see if he really had that dog. Like, if he was just good and was just getting by and didn't really care about winning as much as he cared about, you know, numbers and getting paid. He proved me wrong.
Oh, yeah, the chubby assassin out there getting it.
And he was cutting up. And now they got Christian Wood. That's a great addition. Hey,
right.
I like it.
But you don't think we're going to make it to the finals?
No.
All that being said, no.
That might make it to the Western Conference Finals, but I don't think that, because we all know how it goes. As long as folks are healthy and stuff like that, like, man, look, again, anybody who listens to me, you know, I'm biased. Yes. I'm a Dame fan. We ain't get him all the help he needed, but I believe that he's healthier. He say he's healthier than he been in 4.5 years. And I heard John Sally say something. He was talking about Westbrook in L.A. and just, you know, Steph and Clay and superstars just having certain seasons where they just need a break. And they come out and they be fine. Like, when Clay went down, Steph, had a broken hand and the next season in the COVID year, and he kind of didn't play a lot. So he had a chance to come back the next year. And he still was hurt, and he didn't play a lot. But this year, they all together. Same thing with Dame. He been playing nine and a half years, whatever. No time off. Olympic team, stuff like that. No time off. Got married, got twins, got other little stuff. You know what I'm saying? It matters. And so now you had a break where you only played in like 20 games. Then you had surgery, so you couldn't really do too much for about 6 weeks. So I'm looking forward to him coming back and having younger talent around them that's hungry. You know what I'm saying? Like, they want to win. They really, a lot of guys on the team got chips on their shoulder. Then you got a head coach in Chauncey Billups who played with a chip on his shoulder his whole career. So it's just a different thing. I'm intrigued. You know, I want to know, hey, are we going to be a top six team? We going to have to be in the play-in? Like, what are we doing? Because the Lakers got a new coach, and the Mavs didn't get worse. They got better. And the Suns, they kept everybody. What's going to happen? The Western Conference always is a tough thing to get through. So we gonna see. I'm down for the NBA season this year.
And that's the homie Big from the Big Talk Sports Entertainment Media Network. Bruh, thank you very much. And man, you got to come back again. Like, seriously, dude, like, you got to come back. Like, seriously, I'm manifesting it right now. You coming back?
I'm back. Let me do a shameless plug. Hey, if you want to listen to the show, I'm on all platforms. Just type in BTSE space 365. I don't care if you on iHeartRadio, Spotify, Pandora, Apple.
Yo, Marcus L. Spade Johnson here, also known by DJ L. Spade. And I got a new album coming out November 16th. L. Spade is 2. And I will be ecstatic. You guys, go stream that or buy it. Blessings. November 16th, L. Spade 2.